Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we have a subject that I don't know of anyone that isn't interested in it. And what is that subject? It's healing. We have so many things that go on in life, and sometimes we have experiences that can be physically very debilitating, very upsetting, and we wonder, what can we do? Well, my guest today is Meg Blackburn Luzzi. And her book is Touching the Light, What Miracles Are Made Of. Do you mind if I call you Meg?
Please.
All right. I really am thrilled to have you on the show today. And I'll tell
Thanks,
you what.
Donna.
I think your presentation about healing, working with energy, is very well done. This book is so down to earth. And it is so clear in the information that you give. You have photos in it. It's just terrific. It takes out what I call the woo-woo stuff that's so often
I hope so.
dumped out there. And what I like about it, too, is the understanding that this energy is everywhere. It's not just exclusively accessible by A person or B person. It is
right
there, and we can learn how to work with ourselves and or maybe other people, and it's all a level of interest. Some people are really drawn to this as you were drawn to it, and others are not, and that's perfectly all right. That's what makes life so magical as far as I'm concerned. But let's talk about how you got started in this. Because it's been my observation that most of the time when people get into these modalities, it's either something very personal or it's something that they learn through another person. What was with you? What happened to you?
Wow. Well, I basically had what a lot of us call a very serious dark night of the soul, where whatever I created in life, whoever I thought I was, whoever I thought was important to me, literally fell apart in about a two-week span of time. It was about 15 years ago. And I didn't feel okay to go home. I was working out of my car because I started a business, and the people that were with me ran me out the door. And it was just everywhere I looked, it was something. And I woke up on my friend's couch one morning just in tatters, you know, and I looked up and I said, okay, self, whatever this is, we're going to lay here till we get it. Well, I learned a couple of things really quickly. Looking at things from my perspective rather than what I thought from the victim side, you know. And
mm-hmm.
I realized
mm-hmm.
that I didn't like me very much at all. I didn't know how to be honest with myself, and I had been fooling myself and making people something in my life that they weren't. And the other piece of that was I didn't even know who I was or what I wanted, because I was doing what everybody else, what I thought they all wanted me to do, trying to please everybody. And it didn't work. And so I looked up and I said, whoever I am, whatever this is, I accept. And I was about as humble as you can get, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as soon as I got what I call non-defended, and I stopped trying to be anything, just started living, my intuitive gifts started to just explode. And I can't even tell you, that's not even a big enough word. And I felt energy. I knew things. I didn't know what to do with it. You know, I didn't have anybody to mentor me with it, and I was really on my own. And the biggest thing at the time was that I was feeling all of this energy, and I couldn't find the go button to relieve my body. And it was uncomfortable. And I started moving with music and following the energy and learning about it and feeling it and being really, really aware inside and out, but I still didn't know what to do with it. And I started begging just out loud. I lived alone by then, and somebody show me what to do. Somebody show me what to do. Well, one morning there was this holographic being in my living room, just popped in, startled the heck out of me. I jumped back 10 feet, and he disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And I quickly got myself back together, and there he was, patiently waiting for this human, you know, to get it together. And anyway, long story short, there was a whole succession of these guys who came and taught me about energy and creation and consciousness, and later they started floating bodies in front of me in a slow circular way, and I was looking at the energy fields and started seeing anomalies, and I already knew how to change them because they taught me how to work with energy, and it just kind of went from there, and I practiced with people for over a year, never charged a dime, you know, followed up, said, what's your experience? I never said, well, are you better or worse? Or I just said, what's your experience? And left it wide open, and I started to realize that what I was learning was a methodology to go through the entire etheric anatomy, and it was affecting human experience, and it was mind-blowing. So I kept doing it, and 15 years later, here we are.
This, I think, is so interesting because you're not the first person that I have discussed some of these things with. And every one of us is different. And dependent on, this is just my awareness, dependent on the neurological system of a person depends on mm-hmm. how effectively they're going to be able to, let's say, view and see the energies, the etheric body, and what's going on there. And many times things are starting in that etheric body, that energy field that's around us, before we actually physically feel something.
And always.
I know that Tibetan lamas often would be able to pre-diagnose symptoms because in their culture and in their medical training, it was quite intense. And
yeah.
This was something they were expected to do.
Yeah, and the way that you can do that is that things start to happen in the energy field before it ever becomes physical. Even cancer metastases will be hanging out in certain areas of the etheric field, and if mm-hmm. you know what you're looking for and you find them, you change that, and then the cancer doesn't come back.
Right, and that is something that the masters of Qigong do, and it is. Regardless of whatever term you apply to it, many times it takes a long, long time for people to acquire the disciplines and the understanding. And it usually has been hidden among many different cultures. They have hidden it. And I have found it so amazing that in the last 10 to 15 years especially, and you could correct me if you find it any different, but it's as if there is an intelligence that is saying it is time to change how you work with wellness. It is time to change the thinking patterns. And so people like you that have these, call them holograms, of persons that come to you and say, look, I want to educate you. You are going to be able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that are happening in different parts of the world, and I think you are so fortunate to have gone through this. I know it's quite an altering situation when you have someone all of a sudden popping up in front of you saying, hello, you know me? You know, excuse me, I'm ready for the loony bin. I think they'll take me, if you were in Washington, we'd take you over to Western State. But
yeah, you know, Donna, it was bizarre because I didn't feel insane. It seemed so natural because I was so raw and so humble and had nowhere to go but up, really, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And I've always been immensely compassionate for other people, and I could feel things and know things. So this just seemed for me to be a natural part of my own progression.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it was so bizarre. People couldn't understand me when I explained it to them at first. I didn't know how to communicate it. And
right.
And it is a process, but it doesn't have to be a hard thing. And what's really interesting, I'm glad you brought that up, couple of things. I'm not the only one in the world that's getting stuff like this, you're right.
Right.
And I'm cool with that. It's not a competition. You know, it's an exciting time.
Mm-hmm.
And the other piece of that is that even in the Amazon rainforest, and even in many of these other third world cultures, the shamans are now saying there are no more secrets. It's time to teach what we know. So
the old
time of the initiate and the hidden secrets, that's old, that's archaic, and we're coming together as a human race, and I think it's a beautiful thing.
I do too, and I think a lot of it is happening because of our technological advances and the capacity for people to communicate with people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is one of the greatest stimuli, perhaps I should say, that is enabling people to communicate their experiences. And when you take it out of that, I know when I teach, I really think, just like you, be aware. You'll find what's right for you. And the healing modality is so, just so incredibly special. And we're all healers on one level or another. We are all healers. But what you do, and of course you do teach classes, and we'll go into that in a little while, but what you do here in your book, you have been able to put things down into the written words. So someone could sit with your book, take a page at a time if they wanted to. Use a highlighter, folks. That's what I'd recommend. Use a highlighter, because there are going to be things that draw you, and maybe you're having some problems, and that's what you go into. And one of the comments that you make is, we have to step beyond our belief systems and our defensive modes. Boy, is that the truth. You have to let it go. You don't know. And we all are controllers. I don't care what anybody says. We all want to make sure that we've got this in place and that in place. Heck, that's just the way life is. You can't go around flopping like a flipping halibut, just going nowhere. And if you don't, you have to plan things. But when it comes to this, when it comes to developing intuitive ability, healing abilities, there is a flow. And it's an amazing thing. And I agree with you here. You say alternative healing unfairly receives a bad reputation. And, boy, I couldn't agree with you more. But if people don't experience, how are they going to know?
Exactly. Well, people are made to be afraid of it, that it's a crazy woo-woo kind of thing or something. But it's very real. And, in fact, so much so that I've started to have doctors and other medical personnel in my classes, because they're starting to realize that something else is going on, and they want to know what. So I think that this is a time of bridging, you know, I'm actually calling this a vast contribution to the changing future of medicine. That's the tagline on my new website for the book, and I really feel that way. Because,
well, I agree with you.
Wow.
Yeah, you know. I agree with you. And I think that there is a technology evolving, that is going to enable people that cannot see, as you see, the etheric field. They're going to be able, with equipment, to be able to see them. To a degree, MRIs and the scans that we're doing right now, because they're in all different colors, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just like Dr. McCoy used to have this little thing in his hand and he would scan somebody's body. Basically, what Gene Roddenberry was showing was that he was scanning the energy field for anomalies. It's nothing more than, you know, Gene Roddenberry was so right in so many cases. But, you know, if you needed an analogy, that's a great way. You know, we're going to have instruments like that in the not-too-distant future. So that if people don't see like I do, or some others do, then they'll be able to still access these things and read them and understand them.
Absolutely. Now, in your book, you talk about a man who in the 1930s, his name was Royal Raymond Rice, and he had invented a quartz crystal light refracting microscope. What did he do with that microscope? I've got the information in front of me, but I'd like you to tell my audience. It's absolutely fascinating.
It is fascinating, and it's a sad story. It's a wonderful story, but a sad story. Dr. Rice built this microscope out of quartz crystals that refracted light, and he was able to actually watch living organisms in the blood under this microscope and see the colors of the frequencies of diseases as they were present in living alive, you know. In medicine, normal medicine uses microscopes with dead things, smears of blood that are dried out. Dr. Rice looked at it when it was alive, and he saw these frequencies, and he began to understand that each anomaly and each normalcy had a certain color. And he started to play with that, and he started to introduce opposite frequencies. Color is frequency and sound. And so Dr. Rice took that understanding and figured out how to obliterate disease by introducing different frequencies. And he started a study of very, very, very sick cancer people that were patients that were terminally ill, 16 of them. All 16 of them completely recovered. And then the AMA, the man that was in charge of the AMA at the time, the American Medical Association, wanted to get in on this thing that Dr. Reif had discovered and wanted to make money on it. And Dr. Reif said, that's not what it's about. So they took him down. They destroyed his lab. They took his notes. They just basically ruined the man. And that happened several times in the 1930s. This guy named Huxley.
Yes.
Yeah, Harry Huxley. And then there's a French guy, a French-Canadian, I believe, who may still be alive, who reads Lifeblood and was making some amazing strides towards healing people. All of these people have been put in jail. They've been ruined because nobody can make money off of something that cures people.
See, I disagree with that theory. I think that keeping people well makes a lot of money. Because you look at alternative therapy and treatment, and people are wanting to stay well. We have got such, I mean, the cost, it costs a minimum of $10,000 a day when you go to the hospital. And you look at that, and you look at healthcare costs, people are happy to pay to be able to stay well. This is something that used to be in Chinese culture. The physician wouldn't get paid unless his patients stayed healthy. So
yeah, but that's the flip side of the coin, Donna. I mean, that's our side of the coin. The corporate side of the coin says, we need your money, and we're going to take as much as we can get a hold of. But then there are all of us out here saying, wait a minute, we want to be well. We don't want your poison. You know, we don't want to do it your way. And so there's been a paradox, and I think we're about to see a massive shift in that.
Well, it's people are making a difference by the way they're spending their money. Because the billions of dollars that's being put into alternative medicine, a lot of the top institutions now are waking up and saying, excuse me, people are going to XYZ, they're not coming to us, and they're looking at us and saying, excuse me, do you know about this research and that research and the other research? And they go, uh-oh, we're in trouble. So it's happening. But one of the points you bring out that I think is very important, and that is life is what it is. And I'll quote from your book, we live in a biological physicality that is subject to invasion and infestation by viruses, bacteria, parasites, and other pesky problems. You also can have severe injuries and all this type of thing. We're not trying to put down anything relative to the skills and the knowledge that's been accumulated through the centuries, but what we're trying to do is express how some modalities don't fit anymore. And with education and understanding, we can move on, and that's where the healing thing comes in. And you have a chapter that says, what does it take to be a good healer? And I loved your statement right off the bat, say, deal with your own issues first.
Yeah, I thought everything transfers.
Yes.
Everything transfers. You know, our emotions, our thoughts, everything is energy. And when we get involved, when you do this kind of work, you're literally merging with the energy field of the other person. And whoever you are and whatever you are in that moment, it becomes them for a while as well. And it's a pretty strong statement, but it's the way I see it. And the only way to be a really good healer is to make sure you're clean going in with somebody else. And I can't stress that enough.
Oh, I agree. And I have known people... I'll share with you a quick story. There was a woman that I met many years ago, and she had phenomenal healing abilities. And one of her skills, and she happened to meet a couple people that were trying to teach about this, and she entered into somebody else's body, was able to go through. It was a paraplegic. She was able to enter into that person's body, actually go back into the mind, see what they went through, and she was terrified. She just absolutely was traumatized, and the people that were supposedly the teachers didn't have a clue.
Yeah.
And I remember her telling me, she said, I just don't want to do this. I can't do it because I felt everything, I smelled everything, I could hear everything.
Yeah, I can relate. And here's the deal. It's an awareness. We don't have to own it. And that's what a lot of healers don't understand, and a lot of people that teach it don't know to tell people. I've gone through a lot of those kind of things, but it's kind of like you're gaining an awareness. It's not happening to you. It's like it's watching a great 3D movie. You know, you're seeing it and everything else, but it's just a story that you're experiencing. Well, that's what a body will tell you if you're in the right space to listen. And unfortunately, it scares the heck out of people when they're not properly trained. I know. because I've been through some really whopping experiences learning this on my own, but it all comes down to the fact that it's nothing more than an observation, and it's not ours, and that's what I teach my students. Look, it's not yours. You don't have to carry it around. You know, a lot of people, for instance, that call themselves empathic become victims of their own gifts.
That's
they let them sit there. You know, same kind of thing.
Right. I tell people, be empathetic, not sympathetic. As you said, you said it very well. You don't own it. This is something you have to have a detachment with, because your responsibility as a healer, as an intuitive, whatever it may be, is to be able to reflect the best for that individual, the highest of best for that person, so that they will be able to deal with it, because we all have to be responsible for what goes on in our lives.
That's right. And drama and trauma has no place in the healing arena whatsoever.
Oh, I like that. Drama and trauma and drama. Say that together. Trauma, real fast, five times.
Trauma and drama have absolutely no place
wonderful.
In the healing arena. Yeah.
Absolutely great. I really think that's great. Now, you'd had a story in your book about being in Peru for some special ceremonies. Now, before you go into it, I want my listeners to know you actually have exercises in the book that people can do. And would you recommend that they speak some of the things maybe into a tape recorder so that they could play it back later on for themselves?
Or journal. You know, if you keep track of your experiences, later they start to make sense. They might not right now. Because when we start to open up, what happens is we get fragments a lot of the time, pieces of information or little visions or feelings or however we perceive, and we don't always know what that means. So if you journal and say, I experienced this today, and then someday, 3 months from now, you're going to have another piece of that maybe because you got back into that place. And ultimately, and that's what happened to me at first, I started learning in fragments. None of it made sense. But rather than trying to stop and define it, just don't ask who, what, where, when, why, or how. Just have the experience and let it reveal itself. And I think that that's why I was able to go so far so fast, was because I never asked any of those questions. I just kept saying, show me. And wow. So, yeah, journal it, record it, whatever works for you, you know, do that. And let it go, because when we start having an active mind, we close the door to our higher awareness. Absolutely slams it shut.
You had an experience in Peru where you did some special ceremonies. And, of course, the Peruvian people are, especially the people of the mountains, are very, very close to the earth, and they have a very strong respect for those on the other side, but also for energy itself. And I've had the opportunity to interact with a Peruvian shaman in the past, not a great deal, but I was impressed with many of the things that she said. It's very compatible with much of what you talk about in the book. But tell us about what happened with you when you went through your special ceremony there.
Which one are you talking about? The one where I talked to the two girls after the experience?
Yes, you were in a cave. One of the caves that sometimes is partially submerged underwater.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, we're on the same page, different direction. Okay, yeah. We were at Lake Titicaca. I go there regularly, by the way, to Peru, because I just love the people, and I take groups there. We were staying on the island of Amantani with the locals for the night, and I started having these massive visions. I mean, just blocking my reality. I was having these massive visions of being in these caves, in these rooms that were kind of squared out of stone, and there was water on the floors and sometimes ankle deep, and I looked up and I saw all of these symbols and carvings and on the ceiling, and it kept happening, and I kept seeing the area from different directions or different rooms, and like it just kept going on, and I didn't know what was happening. And this is often the case with me when I go places that I haven't been. And I didn't know what was happening. And the next morning we went to get back on the boat to go wherever we were going next. And these two girls came up to me separately and said, I know that you understand about things like this, and I'm having this experience, and I don't know what to do with it. I said, well, tell me about it. And independently, each of them started to describe being in these rooms. It seemed like a cave, but it was kind of cut out. And it was wet in there, and it was very vivid for them. And I said, well, and I always try to validate, you know, when somebody comes up, because a lot of times you'll have a mutual experience with someone else. And I always try to validate that, because I'm full sensory out of my body. It's very weird. And I said, well, what else did you see? What was on the ceiling? And they looked at me both, and it was hilarious, and said, gee, I never thought to look up.
Mm-hmm.
So later, mm-hmm. I went to my shaman friend, and I, you know, said, Jorge, what are we seeing? And he said, well, there were legends, stories in the oral tradition that there had been a very large city there that is now under the water, under the lake, and mm-hmm. that there are still beings that live in the city under there. And he didn't give me a whole big story, but just enough to validate that that's what we were picking up on. And it was amazing because I didn't even know those girls. They were in someone else's group.
Mm-hmm.
And they were freaked, you know, they were kind of scared because this was happening, and it was very powerful. In Peru, there are some really immense energies that can really change your reality very quickly, and when you're not prepared for it, it can kind of startle you, you know. So they were just looking for validation, and weird things like that happen all over the world. And the thing is, don't be afraid of it. It's just an awareness. It's like, oh, this happened here how many thousands of years ago? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had a lot of those experiences. And, you know, you go places you've never been and you're going to pick up on stuff. It's just, you know, we're not the first ones on the planet.
That is the truth. And that
yeah.
is what I think. And I think Casey mentioned it many, many, many years ago. And, of course, it has been stated in legends of cultures from centuries back that mm-hmm. we are going to be made aware that there were those that were before us that had so much knowledge. And, however, they destroyed themselves or Mother Nature had a major hiccup. Who knows? But
yeah.
we're finding out more about this. And
well, our history books are wrong. They had more technology back then than we can even shake a stick at yet.
Yes, and so we are on the cusp of being in the opportune position of either making major breakthroughs and moving forward, or we're going to give ourselves a good swift kick in the can, and we're going to have to deal with whatever we create. So it's quite a fascinating period that we're in. My goodness, the hour has just flown by with you, Meg. And
thank you,
I want
Donna.
For those of you listening, I'm very sincere about this. The book, Touching the Light, is outstandingly informative, but the pictures, the explanations of how to do healing, I know we couldn't possibly go into it. Her book is just wonderful. You want it, if you're interested in this, this should be a must-have in your library. And what you do, you go to her website, spiritlight.com. That's spiritlite.com. And you'll find out a lot more. And she does teach classes, and she's also intuitive. But this is a woman who has dedicated her life to making a difference. And this book, which took a long time to bring together, is one of the handiest things that you could ever have. So, again, I'd recommend Touching the Light, Meg Blackburn Losey, L-O-S-E-Y. And Meg, I want to thank you so much for being with me today. It's
thank you,
joy.
Donna. It's been a pleasure to be back on the show. Thank you.
You're welcome. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Come right back. Go to the website, spiritlight.com. We'll be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you.
We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Topperson will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Topperson. Topperson is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Topperson or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Topperson, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. To see more details, God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are open if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Our guest today, I really appreciate her material, and I want to share a story with you. I was attending a Science of Mind class many years ago, and there was a woman that was called a practitioner. Now, in Science of Mind, they teach you how to use your mind and how to do absent healing. And this woman shared with we students the information about how, as she had learned how to train herself, she had this perspective about herself. She didn't quite know how she was able to do it, but she was able, through the power of the mind, to reflect energy to someone who was ill, and they would benefit. Well, she had been doing this for quite a while, and the results were there were some physicians that had become aware of how effective she was. It got to the point that she always had a small outfit or arrangement set up, so if she needed to go to a hospital near to where she lived, she could do it in just like 15 minutes. She could be up, dressed, out of her house, and at the hospital working with doctors. This one night she got a call, and it was like, you know, early hours, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. She gets to the hospital. The physician was going in to do a major surgery. He said, "I want you to just stand in the operating room. Don't do anything, but just do whatever you do, because this is an extremely critical surgery. I don't know that the patient is going to survive." So she said, okay. So they suited her up, if you will. She got all scrubbed. Stood in the corner of this operating room. More than one physician was working on the patient. She was really not noticeable by many. She just sort of blended into the background. And all she did, she went into this deep state of meditation, projecting healing to the individual who happened to be a male on the table. The surgery was performed. It took hours. She stood in the corner for a long, long time. When it was all finished, the patient was taken away, and the doctor went to her, said, "Thank you very much," and she went home. Well, the physician called her within a couple of days saying, "I want you to come back to the hospital." And she said, "Oh, do you have another surgery?" He said, "No, I want you to meet the patient." So the physician, when she got to the hospital, was standing in the room where the patient was resting and recuperating. She walks into the room, and the physician started to introduce her, and the man said, "I know who you are. You're the lady that was in the room sending healing energy." She was stunned. She hadn't even opened her mouth. And she said, "How do you know that?" And he proceeded to tell her how he had been out of his body and he was floating up near the ceiling of the operating room. And he saw her and he saw the energy coming out of her
going into his body, which was being operated on. He said it was extremely interesting. And then, all of a sudden, he was snapped back into his body, but he retained the entire memory, not only of the surgery, but of everybody that was in the operating room. The doctor had heard the story, and that's why he had called her. He said to her in front of the patient, "I have never, ever had a patient go through an experience like this. And when I came in to see him today, he told me this story and that he wanted to meet the person that was standing. He knew it was a woman, but he wanted to meet the woman who was sending all of this energy into his body because it was helping him and had helped him quite a bit through the surgery." She was blown away. She said that in the class, she said, "There are so many things we don't understand. I do not honestly know exactly how this works. All I know is that it does work. And you need to understand that when you are sending this energy, you are merely a conduit of it." Now, that story was told to me by a woman that didn't have Meg's experience with healing. She didn't have someone that was teaching her, the masters, as Meg calls them. Whoever the teachers are, it doesn't make any difference. But healing comes in many different ways. And I think it's important to share these stories because people of all walks of life are involved in this, and there's an openness that I think, as Meg said, that we need to be able to recognize. This is out of woo-woo land. This is no special stuff in the sense of only a certain person being capable of it. It's the power of the mind and the spirit to be able to project right things. But like Meg said, you have to clear up your act. So the first person you really should focus on is yourself. And that may sound rather selfish because we've been perhaps taught that we're supposed to give it out and pour it out to everybody else. But remember, if you take care of yourself, if you're good to yourself, good to the body, which is that facilitator, it's that generator that allows you to bring that energy forward, then you're going to find that you're going to have a lot more harmony in your life and you're going to be able to serve life better on so many different levels. Some people are wonderful with animals, some are wonderful with birds, some are wonderful with gardens, others are just, you know, there's no limit to how it can express itself. And that's the beauty of this. And it just makes me feel so good that I'm able to have people like Meg on and so many others who are so committed to dedicating themselves, one, to learning. You never, ever stop learning. You're never, ever going to have it all. Two, being willing to be open about what they experience because one size doesn't fit all. We're all so very different and unique. So if I could just encourage you to be aware that you will always be a perpetual student. Nobody ever has it all. And so we take little bits and pieces that fit within ourselves, that harmonize with us. And that's not good, it's not bad. But the openness and willingness to learn is the greatest key to real success for any individual. And you should be excited about that. Because it means, one, you're never going to get bored, and two, you're going to be able to see so many different facets of life that it's going to be absolutely intoxicating at times. You're going to get so excited, and it's wonderful. I met a woman in her 90s who had been involved in the psychic area ever since she was 17 years old. She said, "In my time when I was growing up," she said, "it was taboo, but it gave me so much joy." And when she got into her, well, I'd say about her 50s, 60s, her kids had been all grown up and her husband passed away and she was able to really get involved with life the way she wanted to, and she said things were coming out then. She said, "Oh, it was so exciting." She said, "I talk about it now and people don't look at me like I belong in an insane asylum." Of course not. This is for real. But it means an expansion of thinking, an expansion of understanding. I think it's terrific. I hope you do too. And speaking about expansion of thinking and experience, I want those of you who are in Western Washington to think about coming to the class that Robert Newman and I are going to be presenting on Saturday, November the 12th. We've got this workshop. It's all about empowering you, your life. He's going to be into feng shui. I'm going to be working with intuitive development. And personal empowerment is really what's underneath everything that Robert and I will be presenting to you. So if you are interested, we are limited to 25 students. We still have some spaces available. So please give me a call at 253-582-5604, 253-582-5604, or email me, donna@delphiinternational.com. It'd be quicker to call me. If you should get my voicemail, the line's busy, please leave a message and I'll get right back to you. Now, this is being held at Bridgeport Place. It's a retirement facility. The address is 5250 Bridgeport Way West. And that's in University Place. The hours are 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We're going to be opening up the doors at 9:15. And it's $39.95 prepaid or $45 at the door. And we'll take credit, debit, cash, or check. And we're going to have refreshments being served. So it's just, this is going to be a wonderful interactive class. So do give me a call or send me an email. Let me know that you want to be a part of this, because you will walk away with tools and understandings that I think you're going to really be pleased with. You'll be able to use them for a long time. Donna Sebo here. I know we're going to be taking a break in just a moment. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Now, we're going to take a break in just a moment, but I'll tell you what. I want to have you some tips for you here. And we're all interested in saving time. And we just go, what can we do? How can we make a difference? If you're like me, you have times when you've got to clean house, you got to do laundry. I mean, it never ends. Gee whiz, I think that's one of the reasons why women live so much longer than men. We can't afford to die. We got too much stuff to do. There's always a toilet cleaner, laundry, or whatever. Now, here are some products that I have heard about. I have not used the Mr. Clean Magic Eraser, but apparently, according to some people, this is a really good product to use. It has little micro scrubbers in it. They take away dirt and grime, including grease, ink, crayon, and soap scum, and apparently works even better than some of the sprays that are out on the market. So you can go to MrClean.com and get a coupon, and then there is an item I've never seen before. It's called the Baseboard Buddy. Do you have baseboards where you live? I do. And those things, oh, my goodness. Sometimes it's so hard to get to them, depending on where you are and what kind of furniture you've got. Well, a woman invented an item called the Baseboard Buddy. Now, it has a telescoping handle. It allows you to adjust the height and angle of its removable, washable, microfiber cleaning pad. That's right. All you have to do is spray the pad with your favorite cleaner, and off you go. Yes. Oh, I just love inventiveness, and leave it up to a female to come up with this item, because we're the ones that usually end up cleaning this stuff. Okay, we're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away. Donna Sebo here. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 530-327-7602. No, that's the wrong number. How about 888-627-6008? Were you awake? I hope so. 888-627-6008. All I need is your first name or your initial, and then let me tell you what's going on. Okay, next week we're going to have Guy Finley on. His book is called The Seeker, The Search, and The Sacred. And then we're going to be talking about communication with animals with Joan Roquette. Then we'll talk with Alan Combs, Thomas Berry, Dreamer of the Earth. This man is called the Father of Ecological Environmental Awareness. Sacred Alchemy, this is music. Diva Haley is going to be with us. And then Egypt is going to be the subject a week from today. Black Genesis, Thomas Brophy. Robert Vival and Thomas Brophy have put together some fascinating information about a country that we're just beginning to realize is a lot older than what we think, and peopled by individuals that maybe we would not have ever imagined were there. So anyway, we've got a great lineup next week. I hope you will tell your friends and tune in yourself, because it is we just are so fortunate here. I just feel so fortunate because of the people that I have the opportunity to spend time with. Now, let's give you a recipe today, because autumn here, yes, fall is here, and in the Pacific Northwest, our temperatures are dropping down into the 30s at night. So before we know it, Old Man Winter is going to be covering us with a lot of his winds and perhaps a little bit of snow sprinkling here and there. It's already been falling in the mountains. So with that kind of weather, we usually like to have heartier foods. It just feels good. You just feel like that's what you need, especially if you're going to be doing a lot of outdoor activity. Well, here is a recipe that I just think is wonderful. It's autumn pork chops and baked apples, and the smell of this when it's cooking is just absolutely wonderful. And this was a recipe by Don Bilsbach, and you're going to need four pork loin chops, 1 tablespoon of flour, 3 tablespoons of butter, 1/2 onion sliced, 1 cup of apple juice, 4 Granny Smith apples sliced, and 1/8 cup of sugar, and 1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon. This is how simple this recipe is. It is absolutely so fragrant when it's cooking. People are going to be salivating before they even get to the table. It's absolutely wonderful. And all you have to do is preheat your oven to 350 degrees, and of course you want to salt and pepper your pork chops the way you'd like to do it. And then you just lightly dredge it in flour, and then, of course, you brown them in butter over medium heat. And you just flip them once. You want both sides to get that nice golden brown crusty look to them. Now, once they're browned, you want to put in your onion and your apple juice, and you stir it in. I'd recommend stirring the onion and apple juice together before and then just pouring it right in over the pork chops. You want to bring everything to a boil, lower the heat, and cover it and simmer for 7 to 8 minutes or until your pork chops reach a temperature of 145 degrees Fahrenheit. Then what you can do while that's happening, you want to put your apple slices on a baking sheet. You want to take your cinnamon and sugar, and you want to sprinkle it over the apples, and you bake it at 350 degrees for 10 to 15 minutes. When the pork is done, just leave it in the pan, and the juices will just absolutely marry with the flavors of the pork. And your apples will be baking in 10 or 15 minutes, dependent on your oven
heat, you're going to find that those apples are ready, and all you have to do is serve them right over the pork chops with your favorite vegetable, a nice salad. Oh, but it's so satisfying. It's really, really good, and it's a wonderful, wonderful recipe. If you're having company and you've been real busy and you don't want to spend a lot of time, it's just going to have that sweetness there of the apples and little touch of sugar and the cinnamon. It's just magical. It's a perfect fall meal. Donna Sebo here. I know you're going to be having a fabulous weekend. And before we go, before we close out the show, I wanted to share some wacky information with you. There's a guy by the name of Alan Freed. Now, when you hear these stories, you wonder why people do it. I don't know that you'll ever have a real good answer to it. They might have a good story to tell, but obviously it's somebody that's bored with life to a degree, and they have nothing else to do. Well, this man spent 39 years, Alan did, collecting more than 11,000 small padlocks that had become separated from luggage. And these were found inside the airport or on runways at Washington, D.C., where he works. In what he did, he made a huge dummy padlock from all of these that he had collected for 39 years. Can you imagine holding on to 11,000 small padlocks? Oy vey. So this big dummy padlock measures 43 by 34 by 20 inches. This is just amazing. He's got the proof. So it just goes to show you, people lose a lot of things, but he really had an innovative concept, and when he put it together, he set a one-of-a-kind record. Also, there's a fellow who's an architect. His name is Jamal Sleeg, and he's from Kuwait. He's been collecting precious prayer beads, now known in Arabic as misbah, since 1979. He has more than 2,000, the majority of which are made from amber. This man is so passionate about collecting these rare, precious prayer beads that he's flown to Poland, Turkey, other places just to get one stone. In total, he has about 56,000 antiques and curios from all around the world, including some 14th century silverware and 200-year-old carpets. Amazing. You know, there's a good side to that. When people are collecting in that way and manner, they are custodians, in my view. Because of their love for whatever it is that they're collecting, whether it's padlocks or prayer beads, they are preserving something. I used to watch antique shows and was always amazed at the collectors and the interest that they had. And usually they took very good care of things. Let's face it, you can't take it with you, but if you're a good custodian and you've had these collections, they can be passed along, maybe to a museum, or maybe somebody might want to buy it from you. It's just amazing, and I'm so grateful for these people because it really does give us something to be aware of. A lot of things that were made at some point in time aren't made anymore. Maybe the materials aren't available, or it's just not economical to do. But because of someone caring, the beauty of what was created can still be enjoyed. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You are a healer of your own life, and you're a major contributor to what life has to offer. Thanks so much for being with me today. Have a magnificent weekend, and we'll be back here on Monday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.